The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. It's Tuesday, so we're talking Europe. Bundesliga and Ligue 1 are underway, and the title races are not quite done yet. We salute Leo Messi and his amazing bicycle kick, and ask, how are Bayern looking even better without Lewandowski? Meanwhile, from lever to Barca's levers, will the Catalans' logic-defying summer catch up with them? Can they register these new players in time for this weekend? And was hiring Peter Ridsdale as their general manager maybe not such a good idea? All that plus why Roma are going to win the title in Serie A and more in this Totally Football Show. All right, welcome back to the big Euro team. Woo! We got that James Horncastle for you.
G'day.
And soupçon de Julien Laurent.
Bonjour, everyone.
Hola, Alvaro Romeo.
Hola, amigos. How are you?
No, very good, thank you. And guten Tag, Raphael Honigstein.
Guten Tag, mein lieber James.
Nah. This show, listener, goes out to you, because you're special, and also to producer Charlie, who is manning the controls despite being sicker than a dog. Really, really sick. So sick you don't want me to begin to describe what's happening at various ends of his body. But he's still there. Wow. Think about that, listener. Anyway, great to have you all back for a brand new season of Continental Action. Really looking forward to those title races in France and Germany, eh? What's that?
Me too.
Yeah.
Should be fun.
It should be fun. Brilliant. All right. Well, hey, should we start off with a quick round of moment of the weekend, just to break the ice, get us back into the rhythm, hey? How about you lead us off, Alvaro, if you have one?
If there is any moment of the weekend in Spain, because La Liga hasn't started, has to be Alvaro Morata scoring a hat-trick against Juventus. I think this is promising. I think that him scoring against his former club is something nice. And Atletico needs the best of Alvaro Morata because Luis Suarez is gone. So yeah, that's my moment of the weekend.
I like it. James, Serie A similarly won't start till next weekend. Do you have a special moment for us?
Well, it's got to be the sellout crowd at the Stadio Olimpico, James, for Roma's final friendly of pre-season against Shakhtar Donetsk. You had all their new signings, basically given a standing ovation as they came out. Gini Wijnaldum, Paulo Dybala. You had Mourinho also walking towards the team and pointing to them, saying, it's about the players. It's about the players. It's not about me. It's not about me. And they won 5-0 playing some scintillating football, albeit against a depleted Shakhtar side that has lost some good players, has lost their manager. But just a measure of the excitement, because for the Olimpico to be sold out, we saw that obviously towards the end of the season in their run to winning the Conference League. But for a pre-season friendly, just picks up on this wild Roman summer where Dybala was unveiled outside the Square Colosseum, and what, thousands of people came out to see him. So the hype is in overdrive as people beginning to expect a sort of title challenge from Roma.
Damn straight. All right, well, that match against Shakhtar Donetsk, a charity game, raising funds, of course, for the victims of the Russian invasion. Jules, your moment of the weekend.
My moment of the weekend is the goal of the season. And I'm not talking about Leo Messi overhead kick, the first of his career against Clermont with PSG. But Jérémy Livolan, if you haven't seen it in the second division, incredible strike from 40 yards with Guingamp to win the derby against Laval. So, yeah, well done.
Goal of the season, though, Jules? I mean, it's a nice goal. But
what, Livolan?
Stuff like that happens in Northern Ireland, for example, every weekend. From
it will leave a long time, this goal.
Show me the proof.
And Rafa, how about you?
Well, I think the moment of the weekend, James, was a new Bayern signing, Sadio Mane, celebrating with the Ultras at Frankfurt after their 6-1 opening day win. Instant fan favourite. He did only score one goal and was actually not that influential. Probably Jamal Musiala, Bayern's most outstanding player once again, after his fantastic show at the Super Cup the week before. But he seems to have that connection, and players and fans, I should say, have really warmed to him. And it was just lovely to see.
Well, it has been a lovely time for Bayern Munich, the start of the season. Two games, the Bundesliga opener and then the Super Cup before that. 11 goals scored against RB Leipzig and the Europa League winners Eintracht Frankfurt. Clearly not missing Lewandowski in Bavaria. How? Why? Let's find out next as we start with the Bundesliga.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Right, Rafa, you're here for a good time, not a long time. So let's get straight into the German news. What's going on with the Bayern Munich? They lose goal machine Lewandowski and they're just destroying opponents.
Robert who? Never heard of him. Kicker, which is a very respectable, quite conservative German football magazine, said after two games, Robert Lewandowski is already forgotten, which I think is a little bit unfair and perhaps knee-jerky. But it is true that Bayern have looked very, very sharp in attack. Julian Nagelsmann wanted a more flexible setup. I think he was one of the internal proponents of letting Lewandowski leave as soon as he made his wishes very clear. And of course, he apologized, I think only yesterday, about perhaps being a little bit too strong when forcing through that transfer. But on the pitch, Bayern's fluidity in that new 4-2-2-2 system is very hard to deal with because you're basically playing against four forwards who change all the time, plus two fullbacks who push up quite high, or at least one of them, usually the left one in Alphonso Davies. And teams have been overrun. Now, it must be said that Frankfurt, I think, really played into Bayern's hands because Oliver Glasner, unlike the very good setup that he had in the Europa League, where Frankfurt were very solid defensively and then were brilliant on the counter-attack, opted to be a lot more proactive. They tried to press high. They were very open and Bayern just completely tore them apart. So maybe not really the ideal way of facing this Bayern. But so far, it looks happy. And I think what's more important almost is that there's more harmony in the dressing room because Lewandowski did create, I think, a bit of a bad vibe at times last season, even towards the end of last season. And with Bayern, individually, collectively, they're so strong. Whether a season is really successful often comes down to more atmospheric issues. You know, how do players get on with each other? What is the mood in the dressing room? Is there a sort of a happiness or is there a sense of, I want to play and why is this guy playing? And I think so far the early indications are that his move has also freed up a bit of space in the social setup, if you will, in the social dynamics in the dressing room, Lewandowski's move. And so far it looks very, very good.
Okay. Next up for Eintracht Frankfurt, having got pumped by the Bundesliga champions. They were 5-0 down at halftime, by the way. That's never happened in the Bundesliga before, a team losing 5-0 at halftime. But anyway, Eintracht, after licking their wounds, will now face Real Madrid Wednesday night in Helsinki in the European Super Cup. We'll talk about that in a second, perhaps. But meantime, prospects for a title race, how are they looking? How are Dortmund looking as well? The terrible news about Sebastian Haller, their big signing, and his testicular cancer, which has now proved to be malignant. They did get an opening day win against Leverkusen this weekend, Marco Reus with the only goal in a 1-0 win. But they've now suffered a foot injury to Adeyemi, their new attacking recruit.
Yeah, and they're not quite sure in Dortmund what to make of this win because on the one hand, it was the kind of ugly, not really convincing, defensively strong, sort of dirty 1-0 win that has often eluded them in the past. Against tough opposition, I mean, Leverkusen have been one of the best sides last season. I think a lot of people, despite their early exit in the cup, expect them to push really hard for the top four this season and perhaps be involved in some sort of challenge for a title race or at least for the runners-up spot. But Dortmund managed to get over the line, quite literally, because the goal was really scruffy, if you have a look back. But of course, overshadowed to some extent by the injuries. A lot of the new players who were supposed to make a big difference are already out again. Adeyemi, you mentioned, Özcan as well, who was supposed to run the midfield. He's not there. There's injuries as well at the back. So I think it's a bit too early to know how stable Dortmund are. I think they need to find stability before they can even think about challenging Bayern. I think in a game between the two sides, Bayern are too strong. But that shouldn't stop Dortmund, who are by far the best, second best side and second best club in terms of income, in terms of the squad depth, theoretically, if everyone's fit. That doesn't stop them from being a lot more consistent against the sides that they need to beat, like Leverkusen, but even the likes of Bochum and Augsburg, you know, the sort of teams that they struggle against. So they're hoping that with Edin Terzic back, who's hugely popular with the team and with the fans, they can find that bit of momentum again that never really arose under Marco Rose. Mm-hmm. And it'd be great for them, before we even talk about a title race, it'd be great for them, I think, to find that stability that has so often not been there in recent years.
Okay. Anthony Modeste, former Blackburn Rovers man, of course.
He scored 0 goal in Ligue 1, but he's going to an easier league now, so I expect him to score a few goals when he was loaned to Saint-Etienne.
Modest returns, etc., as I'm sure we've said on countless occasions in the past. But anyway, coming in from Cloon, or however that club is pronounced correctly.
You still can't pronounce it after all these years.
Cloon.
Cloon.
I can pronounce Cologne. Berlin. They had a derby this weekend on the opening day. Craziness. And Union won it again over Hertha. That's four derby wins. Hertha. Over to you, Raf. Tell us about the Berlin derby.
Masterclass pronunciation.
The Hertha Berlin.
Union. Yeah. They looked so good and Hertha looked so bad in the derby. And a lot of people were a little bit surprised at the fixture computer, in inverted commas, put up the derby on the first day of the season. Well, it is a fixture computer, but of course it is sort of manipulated and lots of variables. And they could have, I think, picked a better date than the opening game of the season for the derby, because it is a big game. But it was only big for Union because Hertha continued from their very poor start of the season. They were knocked out in the cup. Already Sandro Schwarz, the new manager, under huge pressure. And, of course, all that money that came in is gone from the investment from Lars Windhorst. 375 million euros they spent, and they're no closer to being a big city club than ever before. In fact, they're much closer to going down, I think, but on the evidence so far, I think Hertha might be in a world of
pain.
Pain, James. Right. Pain.
I was going with Union City Blues for Hertha. That's yours.
That
is
also. Yeah. That is also true.
Okay, Timo Werner heading back to the Bundesliga, and we are excited for that. Hope he's going to be happier there. Seems a lovely chap. Frankfurt, Rafa, taking on Real Madrid, and Alvaro. Perhaps you'd like to finish off our German football section with a quick chat on what awaits us in Helsinki.
Well, I believe that Real Madrid is the favourite for this game. Ancelotti, I think that he will field a very similar lineup, if not the same one, that won the Champions League final, just in as a tribute to the players that gave La Orejona to Real Madrid, the 14th Champions League title. Still, there are chances that Rudiger and Tchouameni, the two new players, will feature at some point. And one thing that intrigues me a lot about this game is the fact that they are going to use the offside technology for this game, which is going to happen for the first time. Yeah, it's been tested already across the Champions League and across the Women's Euro Cup in about 180 games. But this is going to be the first time that they will use officially this technology, and potentially they will use it in the World Cup as well. So I cannot wait to see that.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. Frankfurt not in the best of shapes for this game, Rafa. How big a game is it for them?
Yeah, it's huge. They always take European games seriously, as we saw from the travelling support, and they had their best year in decades winning the Europa League. It was such a big deal for them. They would absolutely love to win the game, or at least give Real Madrid a good scare. Unfortunately, their form going into the game is not very encouraging, and I think psychologically it's probably a little bit damaging if you're 5-0 down at home after 45, and now you have to take on Real Madrid. But I think we'll see a different Frankfurt, as I alluded to earlier. I think we'll see a lot more defensive solidity with Glasner opting for a solid back five. and a midfield that is a lot more compact. They were really overrun by Bayern, and I think we'll see a much more durable approach from Glasner in Helsinki. And I think Frankfurt, as Barcelona have seen when they were knocked out, will find them actually quite tough as opponents.
Interesting. That's Wednesday night then. In Finland, Rafa, you got to get off to your yoga. So enjoy that. Isn't it yoga you're heading off to?
Random.
No, Jules assured me you were heading off to yoga.
We speculated that the thing you had after was maybe yoga or something like that to do on your holidays.
Is it yoga, Raf?
No, I don't do any exercise on holidays.
All right. Raf's on his holidays. Where are you, Raf?
I'm in Capri.
Oh, you're in Capri?
Yeah.
Romantic
it's
holiday.
More than, it's
what are
more
you
than
doing
nice.
Talking to us then? Get out there. Enjoy.
Yeah, it's my wedding anniversary.
Oh, congratulations. Oh, nice.
18 years we managed so far.
18 Ooh. Years. All right. Well, on that note, you enjoy the most important match of all, Rafa.
Ciao, carissimi.
We'll get on to some Spanish stuff. We'll talk about Barcelona next. Woof.
Hello, I'm Mark Chapman, and I'm back with some good news. I'll be hosting the Athletic Football Podcast four times a week. I'll be joined by the likes of Adam Crafton, David Ornstein, Flo Lloyd-Hughes, Matt Slater, and plenty more of The Athletic's brilliant journalists. And together, we'll bring you the best insight into the biggest football stories. So that's every single week, Monday to Thursday. And if you like what we do, then please follow and subscribe to The Athletic Football Podcast in all the usual places.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Hey, listener. All right, Real Madrid looking good. They brought in Tchouameni from Monaco. A lot of excitement for him. And, of course, Antonio Rudiger from Chelsea. But I want to skip past all of that, Alvaro. Skip past Atletico Madrid. Looking really impressive, actually, in pre-season, even though everyone says they need to bring in new players, and get straight into Barcelona. Oof. And their mad accountancy chicanery. The biggest financial mess with levers since somebody wrote $350 million on the side of a bus, I'm calling it.
It's mental.
So Bayern head coach Julian Nagelsmann, speaking for lots of people, saying they are the only club that has no money but then buys every kind of player they want. I do not know how they do it. It's kind of weird, kind of crazy. Well, we've detailed a lot of this on the Athletic, and James, you've been part of some of that. Did a special podcast on it. Adam Crafton's been all over it. David Ornstein's got fresh stuff up today. Paul Bayus also with some top stuff on that. But Alvaro, tell us, first of all, these players that they've signed, is it five players that they still haven't been able to register because they've exceeded their wage limit? Are they going to be able to get them on the books for the opening weekend and the game against Rayo Vallecano?
It's still unknown, really. I cannot give you a straight answer. I wish I could, but I can't. Because Barcelona, so far, don't meet La Liga salary cap requirements. It's as simple as that. Even though they have triggered all the financial levers that they could. By the way, it has to be said that it was the Assembly of Socios Compromisarios, which is the season ticket holders, selected ones that approved Barcelona selling the 25% of the TV rights for the next 25 years, and then selling the 49% of Barcelona license merchandising just to get some quick cash and they can go to the market. Well, even though Barcelona has done that, even though Barcelona has presented all this money to La Liga, Barcelona accounts 700 million. La Liga says, no, this is not 700 million. You inflated this with 150 million of your own.
So even they with set all up this, a company, just to break in there and just say, yeah, it's now turned out they set up a company and through that paid themselves 150 million to add to the money they were getting from the right sales, and then went, oh, look, we've received all this money. Yeah?
Yeah, and La Liga doesn't recognize that, of course. So Barcelona will have to trigger the last financial lever, which is the other 24.5% of BLM, Barcelona licensing merchandising, and it is very likely that they will have to either lower down the salaries of the existing players, sell some of the existing players, and the name of Memphis Depay and Frenkie de Jong are the first ones that come to our mind, and maybe after doing all this, they'll be able to register players. So it is a very tricky situation. I remember that last season I was kind of optimistic. I was telling you, I think, James, that Barcelona will be able to register Messi. I was wrong. So this season I'm not going to go that far. But I will tell you that La Liga starts in 5 days and it doesn't look good for Barcelona. They know how to do it, or they think that they know how to do it. But then, of course, you have to talk to Mr. Tebas and persuade him that what you have done is correct and is right and it's legal.
Okay. Selling De Jong would be a big step, or would be a big lever to pull. Is that going to happen?
Well, Barcelona wants to keep Frenkie de Jong.
Do they? Do they, though?
I think so. Xavi especially. Xavi especially wants to keep him. And the other day against Pumas, Frenkie de Jong showed what he's capable of, even though Pumas was a very weak opponent for Barcelona in Trofeo Joan Gamper. But yeah, Xavi wants Frenkie de Jong, that's for sure. Even though I think that his departure wouldn't be catastrophic because Barcelona got themselves Kessié and they've got Gavi, who is 18 and he's been playing really well so far.
Pjanic.
But still. And Pjanic as well is there. I don't know. I think that Pjanic is going to be another lever, James, believe it or not. Or maybe they will have to.
It's not going to bring much money to the club, trust me.
No, a tiny lever.
It's a cheap lever.
It's a cheap lever, but just getting rid of his salary is a good lever. And back to the question of Frenkie de Jong. The thing is that yesterday we found out that Barcelona found irregularities in the contract extension of Frenkie de Jong and three more players. Basically, Frenkie de Jong signed for Barcelona in 2019. Well, in 2020, autumn, Josep Maria Bartomeu, the former president, before he resigned, before he had that vote of no confidence and all that, he extended Frenkie de Jong's contract again, a year after he signed Frenkie de Jong. What he did, basically, was extending his contract with a deferral of his wages. And those deferral of his wages are draining Barcelona now. And Barcelona thinks that this is disloyal administration, and they will try to sue Bartomeu for that. So I think that the best thing for Frenkie de Jong will be, probably, if he's not too annoyed with everything that's happening around him, because some say that Barcelona doesn't want him, the club doesn't want him, the manager does, maybe the best thing for Frenkie de Jong it is actually to leave Barcelona. I don't know to which destination, but to a club that presents him less difficulties along the way.
So Barcelona is suddenly discovering that these contract extensions, which actually produce more of a financial strain, weren't actually legally valid. De Jong's people, I think, say that they don't see anything wrong with them, but I guess we'll find out how that turns out. Meanwhile, from Levers to Lewandowski, how's he settling in, Alvaro?
Well, he started slowly, but the other day, playing against Pumas, again, the Mexican side was very poor. Dani Alves was playing for them, so they used that game as a farewell game for Dani Alves. Pumas was very weak, but Lewandowski played very well. His connection with Pedri was phenomenal, and I don't know if he's going to score as many goals as he did score for Bayern last season. He scored 46 goals in 50 games, but he's definitely providing Barcelona all the physicality that the team needed in the box. And, you know, his link-up game has been really good. And on top of that, he's got really good suppliers this season because Rafinha is there, Ansu Fati is back, and Dembélé last season, he was the player who gave more assists in the second half of La Liga. So I think that Lewandowski was a clever signing. Maybe you could wonder if Barcelona needed Lewandowski so badly to pay 50-something million because they had Aubameyang, and Aubameyang is quite a decent striker too. But yeah, now that you have him, the truth is that he makes the difference. So yes, he was good for Barcelona the other day, and I would like to point out as well that the likes of Rafinha and Dembélé and Pedri as well, they look very sharp this summer. And Pedri is no coincidence that I'm mentioning the name of this guy. When he was available for Barcelona last spring, Barcelona improved immensely. So I think that, yeah, Barcelona has good prospects for this season in the sporting department, but in the financial department, expect me to lose more hair just trying to explain all this financial financial mess.
I mean, if they can get those players in, what a team. Lewandowski, Rafinha, Koundé, Frank Kessié, Christensen, still hoping to sign Azpilicueta and Marcos Alonso. Why not throw in Bernardo Silva as well, assuming they don't completely dissolve under all these bits of mirror, smoke and mirrors from the accountancy department?
Let me tell you the last thing, Jens, because I think that this is very important. I mean, when we say that Barcelona has sold the 25% of the TV rights for the next 25 years, that is a solid loss in respect to Real Madrid for the next 25 years as well. Because Real Madrid is going to be cashing the 100%. Barcelona will be cashing the 75%. So the competitive disparity is going to exist in La Liga between Real Madrid and Barcelona. This is a decision that Laporta made with the acceptance, the permission and the acquiesce of the socios compromisarios, and I think that this is very risky too. So let's see how that plays out. And also, next season Barcelona is not playing at the Camp Nou because they have to do some renovations in the ground. They will move to Lluís Companys, another ground in Barcelona, and the money they will get for the attendance, the ticketing, won't be as much. So I think that these things will compromise Barcelona.
Right. But you'll be able to watch Barca in the metaverse, surely. So
for sure,
it's all okay.
And you won't see rats running around the roof of Barcelona's ground, as we saw in the Joan Gamper last Sunday.
They all left the sinking ship, Álvaro.
Yes, they were trying to run away. But that right. didn't look good either, Jens. I don't know if you saw that, but there were some rats on the roof of Camp Nou the other day. And yeah, that maybe explains a little bit the situation of Barcelona or encapsulates a little bit how they are.
Rats running around the stadium, but also not just the highest wage bill in all of European football, but fully 33% bigger than the next highest spenders in terms of wages anywhere in the top five leagues, which is Manchester United. 501 million a year, euros, that is, Barcelona. Anyway, well, we'll see what happens. The notion is that sporting success will make it all somehow tick over. But as we've seen with other clubs in the past, even big ones like Barca, it can all collapse. A quick word then, Álvaro, while we wait for the opening weekend, on what other prospects there are. Maybe it's Sevilla, who've been in some financial difficulties themselves, but have brought in Isco from Real Madrid. Ooh, yeah. Valencia, with Rino Gattuso in charge, and Atletico Madrid.
Yeah, I think that it's going to be this season a two-horse race between Barcelona and Real Madrid. It's looking like that. Sevilla has been really weakened with the departures of Koundé and Diego Carlos, and Valencia with the departure of Guedes as well. Not a lot of talent arrived in La Liga this summer. Continuity is the word that defines most of the teams, I would say. Only three new managers, one of them Gattuso, then Diego Martínez for Espanyol, Valverde for Athletic Club Bilbao, and the differential signings have been made by Barcelona and Real Madrid, so that's why I expect them to fight for the title. Then you never know with Atletico. The truth is that last season they only got 71 points. And this league probably will be decided in 85, 90 points. So if Atletico can get there, they will be fighting. I don't think so, personally. I don't think so. And then when it comes to Sevilla, I think that this is the team that concerns me the most. They lost 6-0 against Arsenal a couple of weeks ago in London. The team is still very slow. Lopetegui's cautious approach cost them a lot last season. This is not going to change. And a player like Isco, yes, he's going to improve a lot Sevilla's potential up front, but the team is still very slow, and when they go in Europe they cannot compete, and Sevilla's participation in last season's Champions League was a warning. They couldn't qualify through the group stage. So yeah, I think that the fourth spot might be in contention. I think that Betis or Real Sociedad or Villarreal even with Morales, for
Athletic?
Example.
What about Athletic?
We have the best possible manager, Ernesto Valverde, but at the same time, maybe this squad is still a little bit too young. We depend on Iñaki Williams becoming the striker we want him to become. Hopefully him playing for Ghana now will boost his confidence, because he will be playing the World Cup. He has to score 15 goals a season or something like that. Otherwise, Athletic Club Bilbao will find it very difficult to qualify for the fourth spot. I think that Betis, Real Sociedad and Villarreal are real candidates to be fourth this season instead of Sevilla.
All right, well, we'll see how things go the opening weekend. And, of course, next Tuesday, we'll be rounding up the early results. Next up, though, Ligue 1.
Hi, I'm Danny Kelly. You can join me, Jack Pitt-Brook, and the rest of the Athletic's frankly tremendous team of Tottenham writers twice a week throughout the new season for the View from the Lane podcast. It's the podcast that gives you everything you need to know about Spurs, as well as all the joy and pain of actually following them. Search for The View from the Lane everywhere you get your podcasts, and listen ad-free on The Athletic.
We're sponsored for this episode of The Totally Football Show by Shopify.
Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
We're all driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. According to their own survey, 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites. Remember the last time you were hiring and how slow and overwhelming it was? Well, you don't need to go through all that again. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent. And because you listen to the Totally Football Show, Indeed is going to give you a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/totally. That's Indeed.com/totally. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed at Indeed.com. On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
C'est plutôt convaincant, le remplaçant de Nuno Mendes, Paredes, qui va trouver Messi en profondeur, c'est bien joué, il est seul, le contrôle de la poitrine. Oh, quel but! Quel bijou! Quel enchaînement de Léo Messi contre poitrine et retourné dans les 6 mètres. Il est lobé, Dion, le gardien de Clermontois, la magie de Messi.
Opening weekend, Jules in France, it was a big one. The biggest opening weekend in France in the top flight for 45 years.
That's right. 77, isn't it? So many goals.
Exactly. 34 goals across the 10 games. Ooh, five of them for the spunky Parisian outfit Paris Saint-Germain. All right. With Leo Messi. Go on, just do the Leo Messi thing.
The Leo Messi thing?
Mm.
Well, the Leo Messi, he looks sharp. Sharper than he's ever looked last season for his first season, which is understandable because he had a full preseason.
Okay.
He finally has a good manager. He's finally happier as well. So all of that.
Why is he happier, Jules?
Because I think they had time to finally adapt to the new life. And I think he also knows that the new life will end very soon because I can't see him having a third season as much as I would love him to, especially in that kind of form. We know already pretty much that the third year in option in the contract, so 23-24, probably won't be triggered and that he can either go to MLS, go back to Argentina, or maybe even go back to Barcelona. So I think he also knows that this is the second season and maybe the last season in Paris. Let's make the most of it. Let's enjoy it. I think he's much more on board with the new manager than he ever was with Pochettino before. The formation, the new system suits him well. And he started amazingly well, both at the weekend against Clermont. Okay, it was only Clermont, but the game before that in the French Community Shield. So this looks very promising, and the goal that he scored, the overhead kick, was really, really nice.
It was nice, wasn't it?
But what about Ney, Jules? Wasn't Ney?
Did I tell you he got a new girlfriend? I forgot to tell you, I think.
Okay.
And there was a lot of people at the club who hoped that maybe the new girlfriend could help bring him back to,
is it, you know, Wanda?
To his best level. It's not Wanda, unfortunately, although that would be funny. I mean, if Wanda would go from Maxi tomorrow to Dene, it would be special. No, they're in Ibiza. Mauro Icardi and Wanda and the girls.
Did they let the club know they were going to Ibiza, Jules?
I think as a new career, is maybe hoping to work for the Nobu Hotel in Ibiza more than being a footballer. And maybe that there was a job interview there for him or something, because otherwise it's very strange. The club said that he was left out of the squad to sort out personal things. Mm-hmm. And he said, like, you know, this is BS, this is not true. They just gave me days off. Maybe they gave you day off because you're rubbish and they don't want you there anymore.
All right. But anyway, Neymar, yeah, a goal and three assists in that 5-0 win over Clermont. Looking good, huh, Jules? No Mbappe this time around. Did that give the others a bit more freedom, a bit more room to play?
I think it helped in the sense that Pablo Sarabia, who's a good player, played in front where Kylian Mbappe would play normally with Neymar and Messi. And that, I mean, you know, it's like, I don't want to say that they bullied him into defending a bit, but I think certainly if you're Messi and Neymar and you see Sarabia, they say, hey, Pablo, go and do the work when we don't have the ball. Go and defend. So we saw Sarabia, I mean, he didn't do much in the game, but he defended a lot and sort of covered for Messi and covered for Neymar a bit when PSG lost the ball. I don't think Kylian would be doing that. So I think once Kylian comes back, which could be against Montpellier the weekend, they would need a bit of adjustment to be done, especially when they lose the ball and who does what and who goes where. Because he worked pretty well with Sarabia in the sense that Neymar and Messi didn't really have to work defensively, especially Messi. And Sarabia was doing that kind of work. Again, I don't think Kylian would be doing it, but we will see. Certainly, Okay. Certainly the dynamic within the club right now and what Galtier has been doing so far has been very encouraging. The new formation works. Sergio Ramos and Vitinha, for example, have had a really nice impact.
So 5-0 against Clermont this weekend and then 4-0 against Nantes in the Community Shield. What is Gauthier doing? What is the formation?
So he went to a back three, which, remember last season, we begged Pochettino to at least try it, which he did only at the end of certain games or when they were behind and he wanted to change something, but never really installed the formation, for a long time or for a period of time. And that back three, Marquinhos, Kimpembe and Sergio Ramos, so far, as long as Sergio Ramos stays fit, unless they bring another centre-back like Skriniar or someone like that, this is working really fine. You've got Verratti and Vitinha in midfield with Nuno Mendes and Hakimi as wing-backs, which is much better for them, by the way. And then Messi and Neymar behind, well, with Sarabia up front or with Kylian Mbappe. I mean, obviously, if Fabian Ruiz signs, which looks like a possibility, Renato Sanchez has already joined the club as well. That gives you a lot of option even to go to a 3-5-2 formation or to change a few things in midfield or when Marco Verratti would be either suspended, which is a lot, or injured, which is a lot as well, after a night at the Medellin. But at least you've got bodies, you've got options better than what you used to have with Herrera and Wijnaldum and Paredes and those kind of guys, Gay. So it's looking better what Campos and Galtier are doing. But again, it was only Nantes and Clermont. So let's see against better opposition.
All right. Do you have better opposition? Who is there who's going to challenge PSG in Ligue 1? We've got Monaco. You saw them victorious at Strasbourg on Saturday. You've got Palen Fonseca's in at Lille. Marseille looking tasty under Igor Tudor, although the fans are not too happy out here. And what about Nice with Lucien Favre back at the wheel and the likes of Aaron Ramsey coming in and Kasper Schmeichel as well. But Ramsey, what a debut for him.
Yeah, incredible. Came on with 20 minutes to go. And they were 1-0 down, not playing well at all, away at Toulouse, the newly promoted side. And nice run from midfield from Ramsey. It's a good cross and then perfect finish.
Lovely assist.
Yeah, lovely assist. Obviously, someone died the day after. This is what Aaron does. But
you can't talk about that.
Olivia Newton-John.
It was Olivia Newton-John. Yeah. No, it's...
oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah, but I don't understand. I know. Somebody's always going to die.
Yeah, but not that big.
And not as often as when he scores.
Luckily, it's not as often as when he was at his prime. So
yes.
Thank goodness for injuries. Otherwise...
I know. We wouldn't have many...
Poor chat. He must be so sick of this story because it is...
It's not nice.
No, but it's great. Not nice for Olivia Newton-John as well. We're passing over our thoughts. etc.
Yes.
Jules.
Rest in peace, for sure. But yeah, well done. But I'm a bit more worried. You see the Lille of Fonseca playing really, really well. Jonathan David and the fluidity they had, even the calls that he made. You saw Monaco with a B team because they were preparing for the Champions League second leg against PSV Eindhoven on Tuesday night. Doing really well at Strasbourg, and some of those sort of second team players doing really well, like Diata or Diop, players like that. Marseille did well at Reims, although I've really never seen a new manager on his debut at home being booed by his own fans. I mean, this is something else. This is another level. And
why do they hate him so much?
They hate him because it's been quite a rocky start for him since he arrived, in terms of the games in pre-season where they were shocking at best, you know, losing to clubs like Norwich and Nottingham Forest and clubs like that. And because he's already had a few arguments with Gerson, with Guendouzi, with Amavi. And obviously in Marseille, everything gets leaked pretty quickly. So they were just not happy at all by the relationship between him and the squad. They won 4-1 against Reims, although Reims were, I thought, very naive in the way they approached the game. But for him to be booed, you know, when they said, "And your new manager, Igor Tudor," and then the noise and the sound was just crazy. He said he didn't hear it because he was in the dressing room. I heard it from London, so he could have heard him from within the dressing room for sure. So that, I think we will have a pretty amazing season in Marseille if the start is like this.
Brilliant. All right. Well, you mentioned Monaco. They've got the second leg of their Champions League third qualifying round for the group stages. There's another round after this. As it stands, they are currently 1-1 with PSV. Also, games to watch out for between today and tomorrow, Tuesday and Wednesday. Benfica, who are 4-0 up against Midtjylland, looking pretty good to go through. Rangers have a 2-goal deficit to make up as they welcome Union Saint-Gilloise to Glasgow. Anything else should
be
mentioning?
The winner of that will play Monaco. Monaco
will it?
Yeah.
Also, Bodo Glimt, who, of course, thrilled us all in the Europa Conference League last season, are 5-0 up against, I want to say, Lithuanian side, Žalgiris. Anyone want to disagree with that? Yeah? So they're looking good to go through, but then, of course, there's another round after that. Anyway, some stuff for us to be discussing next time around. And whoever does get through to the group stage, where can people see them come the new season of Champions League group stage action?
And the Gold Show, people.
It's back.
We're back.
Back. Never in doubt. Lyon, Jules.
Yeah, just quickly, they started well on Friday night. They won 2-1 against Ajaccio, one of the newly promoted sides. Lacazette with a goal and an assist. Coming back to the club, him and Tolisso, going back to where it all started for them. And a red card for Anthony Lopez for like a crazy challenge for the goalkeeper, like Harald Schumacher on Batiston at the 82 World Cup, that kind of stuff. Which, unfortunately for him, this is not the first time. And that has started the debate again on you know, is he a reckless goalkeeper when he does things like that? Mbappe, Romain Thomas last season, they were all victims in a way of those crazy, you know, him going out for the ball, missing the ball and just clattering, or sometimes having the ball but then still clattering into the opponent. So I hope he learns from it, because that was a really, really, really nasty clash.
Hope so too. All right, Jules, perhaps in a second or two we can ask you if Adrien Rabiot and his mum Veronique are really going to do a deal with Manchester United. But thank you for that Ligue 1 roundup. Next up, it is Serie A.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, smart speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Jules, Adrien Rabiot to Old Trafford, yay?
Well, it certainly looks that way. Yeah, I think so. He's on the short list, whether it's instead of Frankie de Jong, or even if Frankie de Jong happens, they still go for him. He's a different profile, of course, to de Jong. I mean, Juventus probably could not believe their luck when they got a call. For Rabiot, I think he wanted ideally to go to a club in the Champions League. But because there hasn't been many offers, and I'm sure James will back me up on that, I think he will take United. He's certainly keen on joining right now. Then, of course, you have to deal with Veronique, and that's another story.
What I find amazing about this and the bid for Arnautovic is that it's not like these deals are agent-driven, right? It's not like you have intermediaries proposing, hey, We know that Juventus would be prepared to offload Adrian Rabiot. Hey, you know, Arnautovic has had a good season at Bologna. You know, Arnautovic is represented by his brother. As Jules has mentioned, Rabiot is represented by his mum. And so these are clearly players that United wants. United have been proactive about signing, which I think to some fans is baffling, really. And Rabiot, we had a piece on the site about him today. He's just a very polarizing player in Italy. Someone who has come to represent the decline of Juventus' midfield, along with Ramsey. We've seen how Ramsey, with a new challenge, can score a goal, and things look positive for him. So that might be the case with Rabiot. But the paradox, I suppose, is that Juventus play him almost every week. Didier Deschamps calls him up whenever there's not controversy. These very good coaches really like him. And fans, for example, particularly at Juventus, don't really know what he has to offer, because, you know, he has this, he's this tall, elegant, left-footed player who has come through at Paris Saint-Germain, where everyone kind of associates that team, this era, with skill, technique, flair. And, you know, Rabiot doesn't score, he doesn't set up goals, he doesn't create chances. He's much more kind of a physical, athletic player than I think people give him credit for. And, you know, maybe that's one of the things that United are looking for. But, yeah, I made the comparison in the piece that it's like you kind of cross Timothy Chalamet with Scott McTominay, and there you have it. That's Rabiot. So he's going into the final year of his contract, and if Juventus get close to 20 million euros, then that's a great piece of business for all parties, you might say.
Mm. Great bit of business, you think, Jules? PSG let him go on a free. Juve happy to see him depart.
Do you PSG see wanted him to extend, though. And I think he just ran down his contract because he wanted something different. I mean, he's one of my boys, so I'm not objective. He literally grew up like there was only the river, the man between when my parents live and when he used to live. So I like him. I like him a lot. I think he has something to offer. You don't play 45 games for Juventus last season if you're really, really that bad. I can understand United fans being a bit baffled, like James said. I think baffled is a right word. But I do think that 27, he's got something to offer if you put him in the right structure, in the right environment, if he's motivated and everything. He wants to be challenged.
Is United the right structure and the right environment then?
Maybe not.
Well, Ten Hag wants them to be. And Rabiot is better than McTominay or Fred to play like that.
Yeah, I agree too.
The interesting thing for me, I kind of agree on that as well, but I think he's a player well suited to the Premier League, without any doubt. But I'm not sure how well suited he is to Ten Hag. But as I said, it's obviously a very proactive move for Manchester United. This isn't agents going around the Premier League trying to drum up interest and saying, here, by the way, Juventus might sell Rabiot. This is someone who has been specifically targeted by United. So,
but if you're a United fan and you're listening, just don't look at Rabiot's stats in Italy, okay? Because there's, you know, in terms of progressive carries, goals and assists, like James said, all that kind of dribbling. Nah, don't look. Just look at the beautiful Frenchman that you can see coming to your club, and then hope for the best.
Voila. All right then. Let's talk about Serie A then. As Rabiot prepares to pack his bags, are Roma about to win the title, James? They are, yeah. Jose's second season, Paulo Dybala, Gini Wijnaldum. Need I go on? Nemanja Matić.
Yeah, expectation is through the roof. I mean, you probably have to go back to sort of 2004. So, you know, when Roma was still kind of at the tail end of that title winning team in 2001, and, you know, they'd replaced Battistuta with Cassano, and, you know, they were still pulling in huge crowds at the Stadio Olimpico on a regular basis. You know, for me, what would represent success for Roma this season is just getting into the Champions League. I mean, yeah, people forget how far off that they were last year. And, yeah, their record against the sides that they have to dislodge in order to get into the top four, it wasn't very good last year. Yes, they beat Atalanta, but Atalanta ended up finishing behind them, and it was probably the poorest season that you know, Giampiero Gasperini has had since he's been in Bergamo. So all the signings point to a kind of win now mentality, a very short window of opportunity for Roma because yeah, Dybala's approaching his 30s, Matic is in his 30s, Wijnaldum's kind of around the same age profile as well. Yeah, and when all these players are fit and available, and I'm talking more Wijnaldum and Dybala than Matic, it is a very exciting proposition because you know the idea of Nicolò Zaniolo, if he stays, and Dybala playing off Tammy Abraham, it's very exciting. And if you look at some of the goals that they were scoring against Shakhtar, really nice one-touch, flowing team moves.
That beautiful other thing, corner that Dybala took as well.
This is so kind of modern football, I think, in 2022, is to almost judge a player on that one single moment.
No one's judging him on that, but for a professional player to take a corner like
He gave a good, you know, he took a good corner against Spurs when he set up the Ibanez goal. So
yeah,
you know, sometimes
you go.
They're good
there
corners.
There you go. Yeah.
Personally, it's the saddest thing I've seen. I mean, that Dybala corner was pathetic.
Well, look, enough of that. You've killed my buzz.
I know, you killed the vibe, really.
Oh,
let's not talk about Gino Wijnaldum announcement.
Zaniolo staying, that's really exciting. And the papers are strong.
If he stays.
But as we move towards the start of the season, I guess that the needle of probability is swinging in Remain's favour. And of course, you've got Lorenzo Pellegrini.
Yeah, I mean, there's still 3 weeks to go. They haven't really. I mean, they've started selling players, which is encouraging because remember last year they didn't and they spent 120 million. I think if you look around the league, it has been quite quiet in Serie A. Okay, they've brought in Lukaku back to Inter, Pogba back to Juventus, although Pogba's going to be out for 5 weeks. Di Maria. But those deals have largely been done free or on loan. And that's because I think a lot of Italian clubs are expecting financial fair play to bite. Yes, financial fair play is still a thing. And UEFA are kind of agreeing these settlement agreements at the moment. So
one more thing for your Roma buzz. Is Spinazzola, is that like a new signing as well?
Yes, yeah, Spin is back. And I think if he can play as well as he did in the Euros, because up until that point, he'd been considered a mercurial player, very up and down, literally and figuratively. I suppose that the one thing that is not a regret, but one of the things Mourinho did well last year was he gave Zaleski a chance on the left-hand side in Spinazzola's place. And Zaleski was arguably the revelation of the season in Serie A last year. Really promising young player. So, there'll be plenty of games for both of them to play. And there's certainly more depth to Roma than there was last year. So I'm excited. But on the one hand, I would stop short from saying that they're going to challenge for the title. On the other, I look at Inter and Juventus and I think, okay. Yeah, they brought Lukaku back. They brought Pogba back, but there are a lot of problems at both of those clubs in terms of how the teams are set up and looking ahead of the start of the season at the weekend.
What about the champions, Milan?
So people were quite down on Milan because there was the takeover after they won the title, which is still due to be completed in September. There was the long and drawn-out process of extending the contracts of Paolo Maldini and his right-hand man, Ricky Massaro, which went right down to the kind of final hour of their contracts expiring. And then they took ages to get the Charles de Ketelaere deal over the line. But they wanted him justifiably because one of the really good things about Milan's title-winning season, and I think the difference was in the last 2.5 months, Kalulu emerged with Tomori. So they didn't need to spend 40 million on Sven Botman. They wanted to sign De Ketelaere. They signed him in the end. And I think that signing's great. But what we saw from Milan I think really from February onwards was the start of something, not the end of something, because Kalulu did feel like a new signing, and that that Tomori-Kalulu partnership is fantastic. And they've just got more continuity. They played really well in pre-season, unlike Juventus, unlike Inter. Read into that what you will. Mm. So there's some, there's still some very positive vibes about Milan.
Something brewing, something tasty brewing in Milan, if they can get De Ketelaere on.
Yeah.
Hey, what about the big spenders, though, this summer? And yes, I'm talking Monza. They've come up from Serie B with Lecce, Cremonese, who are back after 26 years away, Gianluca Vialli's old side. But Monza, what kind of season has Berlusconi bought himself, if you, you know what I mean?
Well, after helping bringing down the government, you know, he's he's very much front and centre. I mean, when they got promoted via the playoffs, which was I wouldn't say an embarrassment, because they had the biggest wage bill in the second division. They've been the biggest spenders since they got into Serie B a couple of years ago, along with Parma. But yeah, Berlusconi was talking about getting into the Champions League. And Galliani, his old man, old right hand manager, had to talk him down and just say, we'll settle with mid-table or 14th or something like that. But we were talking about Icardi earlier, and there was one stage of the summer in which Icardi and Monza were feeling each other out, talking about maybe him signing for the club. So that shows the ambition. They've signed a lot of players who are kind of experienced in Serie A, sort of very clean cut, no tattoos. That's another thing that Berlusconi has kind of made part of his transfer strategy, although I think they've had to compromise on that a bit.
It's very about clean living, you know, healthy kind of. Yes. Want.
No controversy.
Very active in a way. Yeah, but yeah, they've got some interesting players. I mean, I think one of the things that always told you they were going to come up was they were signing a Brazil under 21 left back in Carlos Augusto. That they've got a player who'd been playing for Portugal's under 21s, Dani Mota, who's sort of been their top scorer last year. So when you're adding sort of Serie A experience to that and some really good, promising young players, yeah, they should do well. But whether that means they're pushing into the top half of the table, I think remains to be seen.
Yeah, I think realistically, perhaps. Well, they begin their campaign at home to Torino this Saturday. Other games to look out for. Napoli begin their campaign away at Verona, a fixture which once gave us one of the most famous banners in Italian football history, when the Neapolitans unveiled a striscione saying Juliet was a tart. Harsh.
Yeah, I think that's actually a fairly polite
I was surprised. I expected worse than tart, to be fair. Well,
no need for that kind of thing. As for Roma, their march to the Scudetto begins at the Arecchi as they take on Salernitana. And Juve have Sassuolo, who sold all their players. Or are busy selling them.
Almost.
They're strikers. Yeah.
And they lost the derby to Modena in the Coppa Italia 3-2 on Monday night, which led their captain, Domenico Berardi, who's still at the club. He was leaving the ground and he was abused by a fan and then chased after him and wanted to settle things outside. And basically he had... had to release a statement afterwards saying, yeah, I know I'm a footballer, I'm a role model, shouldn't do that, but don't abuse my family, don't insult my family. So we've seen a few things like this in Italy. You mentioned Torino, we saw their sporting director and coach get into a big fight in a car park in Austria, in which one was calling the other a d-head to go piss off and that sort of thing. But it worked because the argument was over the lack of signings and they signed a player promptly the next day. So, sort of creative tension very much at the forefront of transfers in Serie A at the moment.
Love it. All right, well, the Serie A season begins this weekend. Golazzo will be returning. The BT Sport TV show, Golazzo Live. We're not actually starting until, I think, round four, is that, James? We're letting the league... settle.
Yeah, it's too hot, I think.
Too hot.
Is the reason, yeah.
Round three is a midweek one. We'll be in, I think, on the 31st of August. with something hot and tasty. But of course, in the meantime, you can catch up with all the action, or our reaction to it, right here on the Tootley Football Show every Tuesday. Looking forward to that. Jules, Alvaro, James, producer Charlie, get well soon. Rafa a little bit earlier on. You, listener, many thanks for your participation in today. Do join us in a week's time and enjoy your continental football, whichever flavour it's going to be coming in. We'll catch up with you next week. Goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Listen ad-free on the Athletic app and discover bonus content by following the Athletic UK Audio Plus on Apple Podcasts. Find out the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.